Thank you, Wyman. The singing was absolutely beautiful tonight. Really was uplifted by that. I've been here over 17 years now and have been through exciting times and wonderful times, and we've just seen good things happen and continue to happen in many ways. And I remember how exciting it was when Steve Martin came here and we saw that first group exit to plant the church down at Union Hill. And then when Tony and Jonna Gentry came, and they were our youth minister here for a period of time, Tony was, and worked with our youth and then transitioned and went out with that larger group of about 150 out to Brookline. And that was a hard time, but a wonderful time. And you know, every time a group has gone out, it sort of takes the wind out of ourselves, and we're back down to a smaller number, and then we begin to rebuild and get up ahead of steam again. And I just, you know, each time I think, well, it can't get any better than this, but it seems like it does. And I was just grateful this morning as I sat and listened to Dwight preach and just seeing what Bryce is doing and having Susanna here. And sat in the Faith Builders class, and Joe taught that this morning. And I just thought, you know, this is the time, as we reflect on all God's blessings and what God is doing here, and as we celebrated Miners' good news, and as we're going to see a Hispanic church beginning here soon, I thought, now these are the days that one day I'm going to look back on and say, these were the good old days. And I just want to recognize God's blessing now and enjoy that and give Him our gratitude for all that He's doing here. And I'm so grateful for this time in our church history. Acts chapter 27, one of the most dramatic chapters in the entire book of Acts. You read it this week if you were right on your schedule through your daily Bible reading. I love the ocean, and I love going to the seaside, and some people like beaches. I like rocky, craggy shorelines with big exploding waves, and I can honestly sit for hours at a time and just watch the waves crash on those rugged coastlines like that. We used to do that when we lived in Ireland, and we would drive out. And I especially love to drive, and it wasn't far from our house out to the shore, and we would drive out after there had been a big storm in the North Atlantic, and these huge big rollers would be coming in from the storm, and they would produce the most amazing, dramatic display of the power of God as those huge waves crashed on the rocks. And there was a place there called Spanish Point, and it was named because of the Spanish Armada that went aground there, and many of the ships were driven ashore on that rough coastline many years ago. And I would sit there and just imagine the terror that those men must have experienced as they were driven under those rocks in the face of the wind and the storm, and what that would have been like. You know, our lives are in many ways like a long sea voyage. There are times when there are periods of smooth sailing. There are times when we are becalmed and we're in the doldrums and feel like we're just not making any progress at all. There are times when we've got to tack and sail against the wind, and it takes a lot longer to get to our destination because we can't go in a straight line. And then there are those storms that come our way, the difficult times in life when we are fearful of what might happen. Many of the storms in life are ones in which we are unwilling participants. Many that I know and you know have been dragged into such storms, and they take a variety of natures. Some people are dragged into the storm of divorce, not through their own will, but because their partner insists on it. Some are plunged into the storm of ill health or our financial struggle, not through anything they've done, but just because of circumstances in life. Well, God is with us through the worst storms that Satan can muster. But tonight I want to look at a different kind of storm, not at the unavoidable storms of life, but at the ones that we can and should avoid, but oftentimes don't. Some of you remember back in the 70s, a hurricane that hit the Mississippi Gulf Coast by the name of Camille. And a legend has grown out of that. Some people say there was a group that wanted to stay and have a hurricane party, and others say no, it wasn't that, that they were just exhausted after boarding up windows and stayed there in that particular apartment complex and past Christiane, Mississippi. But whatever the reason that that group stayed, they stayed. And they were warned to evacuate. And most people did evacuate. But those people said, no, we'll ride it out. They knew that in the earlier storm that water had come into the ground floor, but the building had stood the earlier storm, and so they thought, well, it'll withstand this second one. So they all went up on the third floor, and they were all up in their apartments together riding the storm out when the full strength of Camille hit that apartment complex, sweeping it from its foundations. Most of that group that were gathered there that could and should have evacuated were never found, swept out to sea. The storms of life are tragic enough without going through them when we don't have to go through them. And so tonight I want us to look at some preventative medicine to help us avoid the storms of life that are avoidable. And many of the storms in life are just that, avoidable. Paul appealed to Caesar here in Acts chapter 27, and thus began his journey to Rome to appear before Caesar. Here in chapter 27, let's just read through that first section to really get the context. Let's begin in verse 1. When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the imperial regiment. We boarded a ship from Adramyttium, about to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia. And we put out to sea. Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. The next day, we landed at Sidon, and Julius, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends so they might provide for his needs. From there, we put out to sea again, and passed to the lee of Cyprus, because the winds were against us. When we had sailed across the open ocean, off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy, and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days, and had difficulty arriving off Sindus. When the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete opposite Salmone. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lycia. Much time had been lost and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the fast. So Paul warned them, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also." But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship. Since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. This was a harbor in Crete facing both southwest and northwest. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted, so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island, and the ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. Exciting tale. On the high sea, during a storm, and what led to that storm. Now, the men on this boat that was carrying the Apostle Paul to Rome made five crucial mistakes in judgment, which plunged them into this terrible storm that almost cost them their lives. Now, if you tonight want to learn how to become a casualty in life, I just want to share this with you because we can see how to do it. And there are five ways to sink your ship according to this next section. They made five crucial mistakes. And in looking at their mistakes, hopefully we can avoid making the same mistakes in our life. They, first of all, acted compulsively in making their decision. It says in verse 9 that much time had been lost, and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the fast. After the fast, it was known that sailing in the Mediterranean, in this region of the Mediterranean especially, was extremely dangerous. It was storm season. They had storm season there in the Mediterranean, just like we have hurricane season in the Gulf of Mexico. And so they shouldn't have been sailing after that particular date because of the danger. Have you ever been in a situation like that? You were running behind. You were frustrated. You needed to make up for lost time. And someone said, well, let's do something even if it's wrong. Now, that's not terribly good advice. I've heard that many times. Let's do something even if it's wrong. It's better than doing nothing. No, that's not true. Sometimes it's better to do nothing than to do something even if it's wrong. Every day, folks quit school and end marriages and walk out on jobs on a whim, compulsively, with no forethought or consideration to the consequences that might follow that decision. In Proverbs chapter 27, verse 12, the wise man says, "The prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it." Now, James addresses this compulsive approach to life's frustrations and then offers a better way. In James chapter 4 and verse 15, he says, "Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that." Planning without considering carefully the will of God often leads us down the road to disaster. So before any big decision, before any new direction, however frustrated you are, before you're ready to jump out of the frying pan, we need to stop and ask God's will in the matter and carefully and thoughtfully consider before we make that move. Well, a second way to go under is to do what these folks did. They listened to the wrong advice. Now, I know it was difficult because it says that the owner of the ship was involved in this decision, and I'm sure this captain was under tremendous pressure to do what the owner of the ship asked him to do. Look there in the end of verse 9. It says, "So Paul warned them, 'Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to the ship and cargo, to our lives also.' But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship." Now, in the world that you and I live in, we can always find someone, somewhere, who will give us the kind of advice that we want. This man was in a hurry. He was anxious to get on with things. And so when he heard the advice that he wanted, I'm sure it was much easier to follow that. If you want validation for anything, if you want validation for an immoral lifestyle, you can find a counselor right here in Springfield. Did you know that? You can find a counselor that will tell you it's okay to live that way. If you want to go down the wrong road, that's clearly the wrong road, you can find some professional somewhere that will endorse that kind of behavior. It's not enough just to get counsel, just to seek advice. Be sure that the counsel you get is godly counsel from someone who has a track record that you can look at and observe and see if they know what they're talking about. Someone who understands and knows God and His Word and His will. Get your counsel from the right source. And if there's a conflict between the professional and the counsel of some godly Christian, you need to be careful which one of those two you listen to and follow. The centurion chose the professional over Paul, and he headed straight into a storm. Well, another common mistake that often gets folks into trouble, and it got these folks even deeper into trouble, that they made comfort their priority. It says there in verse 12, Since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. This was a harbor in Crete, facing both southwest and northwest. There was a better harbor, a better place, and they said, let's move on. This is not a suitable place to stay for the winter. Let's move on to this better place. I know a good restaurant there, and there's a nice hotel there, and that'll be a better place for us to spend the winter than staying here in this particular spot. But they probably hadn't heard that old saying. Maybe it hadn't been invented or said back then that any port in a storm will do. They said, let's leave this port and let's go find a better port. You know, some of the greatest storms that people sail into today are caused by their unwillingness to forgo their current level of comfort or gratification, and they want to move on to the next level and get a little bit more comfortable before they're willing to stop. In too many cases, people step ever deeper into financial debt, even if it means breaking the budget and putting themselves in a position where they have no wiggle room financially, where they're only a disaster, or where they're only a step away from disaster happening, because they want to go ahead and live the good life right now. And there are many people that are just a flat tire away from financial disaster. It doesn't take much to just push them over the brink. In Proverbs chapter 24, verse 27, the wise man talks about putting off your own comfort in order to get the job done. And he says, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. You know, that's called deferred gratification. A willingness to go ahead and take care of business now and put comfort and ease on the back burner. I just wonder how many people across this nation, even right now, in these weeks before Christmas, are placing themselves in a position of voluntary servitude to the bank because of things that they're acquiring. They don't want to wait till they can save the money for, and they don't have time to do anything but to work and to make payments then for the remainder of the year. Well, storms sweep in like this, and whole families are washed away. Fourthly, these people on that boat went along with consensus, went along with the majority. In the very last part of verse 12, it says that they went ahead. In fact, the word that's used in my version here, it says, since the harbor was unsuitable to winter, and the majority decided that we should sail on. The majority vote carried. As this was discussed, most of the sailors, all those there, they said, no, we think we ought to go on. And this ought to be a good thing for us to always remember. And I remember my parents talking to me about this when I was your age and all, and I'd come home and I'd say, well, everybody else is doing that. And you know the answer I got to that, don't you? Every parent knows the answer to that. It has something to do with jumping off a cliff, you know. Everybody's doing it. The majority is always just about wrong. I mean, you look at the majority in so many areas, and they're almost always wrong. Jesus talked about the majority in Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Well, they went with the majority. They didn't listen to Paul. Didn't listen to godly counsel. And then lastly, they relied on circumstances as a way to make their decision. Look in verse 13. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Lord, give me a sign so that I can know what way you want me to go. You know, that scares me when people are looking for signals or clues or signs from God so that they know whether they ought to take a major life step, some important decision, and they're just looking for some signal from God. I would just ask anyone, how can you be sure if you do get some sign? Suppose you see a rainbow in the sky and you say, well, that's the sign. I asked the God for, how do you know that's not Satan? I mean, Satan can appear as a masquerading angel. I mean, he can give false signs. How do you know whether it's from God or from Satan? You can't always know that. Seeing which way the wind is blowing in order to make a decision is a poor way to make a decision. Flipping a coin or looking from obscure sign is no way for a Christian to make a decision. I know a number of years ago, and I've used this all of my life, when I was in college, I had a man that I loved and respected, and he talked to us in class as young people, and he said, you're going to have to make a lot of decisions in life, and some of them are not going to be easy decisions to make. And he said, let me just tell you what I've always done. And he took out one of those big yellow pads, legal pads. He said, anytime I'm faced with a difficult decision, I sit down and I pray about it first. And then I write down all the pros. And on the other side of the paper, I write down all the cons. And I try to think of everything. He said, sometimes it takes a day or two to get them all out there. And you think of something at night when you're in bed and you want to write it down. He says, carefully think about it, pray about it. Write down the pros and the cons. And he said, then seek godly counsel. Go to someone whose life has been lived well. Go to someone you respect and ask them, what would they do if they were faced with this situation, this decision in their life? And then he said, lastly, he always asked the Lord to close doors that would be disastrous if he walked through that door. And he asked the Lord to open other doors and make it apparent which doors he should go through, and then to commit himself to prayer. I've taken that option, and Vicki and I have had a number of difficult decisions, and I have never yet had a decision where I needed to flip a coin. I've never yet have a decision have been faced with a decision where it was a 50-50 thing. It was always, after going through that process, always clear which way I should go. There is a way that we can make decisions in life without just leaving it to chance. You know, as Christians, we will go through storms in life. The story ends well. They went through a storm. They had lost their cargo. They almost lost their lives, but God revealed to Paul that not a human would be lost, and not a human was lost. As we go through these storms, let's just be certain that we're going through as few as possible, and none that are of our own making. Let me just close with a word of hope for those of you that are in the midst of some storm. It may be emotional or financial or physical. Whether you were placed in this storm through circumstances, or whether some individual drug you into this storm, or God forbid, because of your own foolishness, you have ended up in a storm, God is with his children through all the storms of life. They went for days on end without seeing any sign of the sun or even the stars. And they lost all means of navigation here in Acts chapter 27. They lost hope, the sailors did. They threw everything overboard. But fortunately, they had one person on board there with them that served a God that even those dark clouds of the storm could not obscure. And when they didn't know their way, God did. And Paul prayed, God heard, God delivered, and those people were brought safely through that storm. I don't know what is before each of us. We have had a wonderful year in many ways. Now, I know that there are families here who've been touched and gone through individual struggles, and we all have our ups and downs. But by and large, we have been blessed as a congregation in incredible ways in 2010. I pray that as we move into the next year, we never know, and we often will talk. And, you know, I hear many of you say, you know, I just wonder what the new year will hold for us, for our family, what is before us, and none of us know. But we do know this. God already knows. God already has the provision for whatever eventuality we will face. And if the worst case scenario happens, if the roof falls in, if we lose our very lives, we have a God who's promised to hold our hand and take us home safely to be with Him. We have security that only the Christian has. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we say this at the end of these sermons, and it gets trite. And sometimes, to be honest with you, I'll have a sermon and I feel like, well, that invitation's not even going with this sermon. And it's a tradition, and it's a tradition that we do here. But I hope that we seriously listen and look at this as an opportunity. And if you're here tonight, we genuinely would love, if you're not a Christian, to see you take that step. We often see folks take advantage of the opportunity to be prayed for and with, and I feel good about that. And if you're here tonight and you need your brothers and sisters to pray with you about something, you know how we do that. We'll always sit with you and put our arms around you and pray with you. And if that's your need, let us do that for you tonight. But more than anything, I want to see, and I believe everybody here wants to see, this whole group go to heaven one day and be with God forever. If you need to come tonight, we encourage you to do that as we stand and sing.